You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of April 23rd, 2014. And this week we're reporting from Ground Zero on Metal Gear.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alvord.
My name is Scott Juster.
And we're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. We're like a military base in an island.
Yeah, a PMC.
A PMC.
We're part of the war economy.
We're like Guantanamo if it was for video games.
and that video games go into our houses and we never see them ever again.
Exactly.
Because right. That's pretty much my Steam account.
Today on the podcast, we are talking about Metal Gear Solid 5. Ground Zeroes.
Ground Zeroes. The prequel to the new Metal Gear game.
To the prequel to a game that came before,
yeah.
But was launched after,
yeah.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
So this is, even though this is the latest game,
mm-hmm.
This is the earliest within the canonical timeline that is the Metal Gear franchise.
The canonical timeline.
Yeah, there's a multiverse here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably like aliens and Ripley's involved, yeah. And stuff.
Yeah.
We played the game. It's a pretty short game.
Yeah, it's I mean, to be fair, we didn't play all the, like, secondary missions or whatever. All
right, so...
But...
This is gonna be a reoccurring question I have, I think, for this podcast. But, what is this?
Yeah.
What do you call this thing?
Yeah.
Because it's... You said it retails for, what, $30?
I forget what it was. It's not full price. I can look it up while we talk, but, like, it's certainly not full price.
But it's also more than a quick downloadable,
yes.
Thing. This is not... It is a disc... It comes in a box.
Yeah.
This is not a, you know, oh, hey, guess what? We've got this special,
yeah.
Episode for your iPhone kind of thing. Like, this is a full... When you're playing it, it feels like a full game experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, so confirmed $30.
Yeah.
That's half of a full price game.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's not... It really feels very much like the introductory section of what will become the Phantom Pain.
Yep.
Like, it feels like this is the... Almost like this is what a really comprehensive demo would do.
Yeah. Yeah. The most extreme, deep, like, mind-boggling demo that anyone has ever made.
Yeah.
Like a true prologue. Like a true prologue.
Yeah, I mean, so the basic idea of the game is that Snake, Big Boss, has to... get two prisoners off of this island.
Yeah.
Chico and Paz.
Yeah.
And those are basically the only core missions that you're ever doing in the game in terms of the singular mission. Now, there's they added a bunch of other robust missions that you can do as well, including one in which you save Hideo Kojima himself.
We should talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. Sorry if that's a spoiler, by the way. I just have a hard... if you were to describe this to somebody and they were to say, Scott, you know, I'm really into Metal Gear. Should I pick up Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes?
Yeah.
Do you say, well... If you plan on playing Phantom Pain, pick it up, and if not,
yeah.
Then don't touch this.
I mean...
It's just such a weird thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, really, now that I think about it, I feel like if you just kind of want to know what's up with Metal Gear these days, this is a far more digestible version than me saying, okay, set aside 20 hours, because you're going to have to play MGS4,
yeah.
And like...
But, I mean, to that end, though, the way that it's digestible is not through the game... It's through the sort of audio logs and what, like, previously on thing that they use in the game, right?
Well, I guess it's why. Why is someone asking to play this? Are they asking to play it because they want to catch up on the lore of MGS? When I would say, no, stay far, far away from
stay,
this.
Do yeah. not go anywhere near
yeah.
that.
Or are you looking to see what, you know, what does
like what
Kojima Productions, yeah, what are they doing? Like, what have they been doing for the past 5 years?
So is this then like a... This is like an hors d'oeuvre.
Kind of.
A sampler platter, if you will.
I mean, it was actually...
This is the Chili's blooming onion of Metal Gear games.
3,000 calories of Solid Snake. I mean, I thought it was surprisingly deep for what I was expecting, actually.
Deep in what way? Like, mechanically speaking?
Yeah, mechanically. Yeah. Like, I guess I didn't really know what to expect, but I mean... And, you know, like usual, we'll do, like... we'll talk about the game itself at this point, and then we'll warn people once we get into like actual story spoilers. But
which I challenge you to comprehend.
I mean, you think we barely knew the story of Halo 4? Like this is gonna be this will be a fun one to recap. But yeah, I mean, like I wanted to see what the MGS, what the Metal Gear team has been doing for half a decade.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, but I mean, you can't really play this without thinking, well, the reason it's so robust is because this is just literally what Phantom Pain is going to be.
Yeah.
Like, the reason there's strong mechanics or interesting or complex mechanics in this game is because they just took it from a game that's on the immediate horizon.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess I just don't... I'm not sure if there's anything wrong with that, or if I don't... I don't know. Like, I don't really hold it against it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I hold it against it either. There was quite a bit of backlash against the game, though, for being...
Yeah, what was the back... I didn't really follow it, because I mean,
the simple backlash was that, was you and I, we beat the game in 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
The core story mission.
Yeah.
Now, you can go back in, but it's the same map, it's the same, you know, level design. They don't move buildings or armaments around.
Well, they move people around.
Yeah, they move people around, and, you know, they give you a different weapon, or maybe there's like a turret sequence in a helicopter or what have you. But the core game to them feels like, well, this is just a piece of Phantom Pain that you would have included in Phantom Pain.
Mm-hmm.
But because you wanted to get a little extra money in the beginning, you instead just chopped it up. I think that is the perception from those people who feel like they played 3 hours of Ground Zero and then were like, well, what the hell? Why didn't you just include this free in Phantom Pain?
Right. I mean, we can always speculate on this type of stuff. But one reason is... they wanted to see how people would react to like this newer style of Metal Gear. Like, there is still time to tweak.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom Pain doesn't come out till what? Like next year? Like, I don't think it's coming out this year.
Yeah, no.
I think it's a 2015 game.
You're right.
So
even not only time to change the branding and shape their marketing plans.
I mean, I think the branding and marketing is well off the cliff. We've known about it for a long time, but I think if there were structural differences, like, oh, how, if the cover stickiness or if, you know, button layout stuff, like that stuff is all, you know, you can change that. You can have feedback. And then the other thing is, I don't know, this is boring business stuff, but I'm sure there's like pressure on Konami to put things out end of quarter or something. And they had to, you know,
give us something.
Yeah. It's like, we need something. We haven't put out a Metal Gear game since 2008.
I mean, that might be correct. Yeah. I think it's fascinating that I don't entirely know why this game exists.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know
what
that meeting looked like when someone decided, let's just make another game out of parts of this game that's not done yet.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a weird decision. I mean, and presumably, you know, you took some people from your team and put them on polishing Ground Zeroes to make it right, and they added
like any demo. It does detract from the work on the main game by its definition.
Yeah, out of necessity, and that's fine. Maybe they had the time. It just seems like such a weird. The concept of this type of game is so bizarre that it can only come from the mind of Kojima, right?
Yeah.
Like I cannot imagine this type of game experience coming from any other AAA game on the horizon. I mean, I guess to some extent you could say that's what, you know, Assassin's Creed Liberation is, or, you know, maybe Ubisoft in the Assassin's Creed series would do something like this.
But they do it every year. That's the thing. Like, that's no, true. But I mean, like, they have a mechanics. Like, they have a machine that does this. I mean, maybe the closest analog may be something like Saints Row 4, because it started off as DLC, but was spun into a larger game. You know, not that either of those.
But what a game it is!
Yeah, exactly. Like, it worked out great, and like, so diving into the game, like, I actually think this game worked out great.
No, I actually totally agree. Like, it's funny because, you know, going into it just now, you were like, oh well, maybe this is a way to see, does it work? What are people going to think of it? And it works. It feels really good.
Yeah. So starting with the stealth, right? Because that's always like, you know, Metal Gear Solid was like kind of the definition of modern stealth back in like 1998, along with Thief or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like two ways you could go. You could go the Metal Gear way, or you could go the Thief way. And like, you know, after Metal Gear came out, there's so much more stealth stuff in third person in games. Like, even Zelda has stealth in it.
Yeah.
And it's like very Metal Gear like. But stealth has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Stealth has changed.
Stealth has changed. War hasn't.
Such as war. Yeah, like, but I mean, And which is why, like, I like seeing the small changes that they've done to the Metal Gear formula. And it's building off of Metal Gear Solid 4, which itself was somewhat of a large departure in terms of the controls, in terms of, like, free camera motion.
Yeah, so know. I'm not as familiar with the series. I never played 4, and I played only, like, the first hour of Snake Eater. In what ways does it depart significantly from the previous title?
So, I think one was of the things that you pointed out was that they minimize the HUD elements.
Yes,
and they hide a lot of the mechanics.
Yep.
There's no timer. So if you get caught, the exclamation mark still appears, but there's no timer, so you can't really just cheese it in a cave until you know you're ready to, you know, go back to alert status or whatever.
I wonder why it took them so long to do that.
Yeah.
Like, the two things on my mind are, one, that's a great idea, because the result is that you're in a constant state of high stress as opposed to having that stress slowly fade down as you see the timer come down.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's not that they go from high alert into nothingness. They move from high alert to searching for you, which is actually more tense, in my opinion, than just being spotted and running away.
Yeah.
That moment of search is when it really gets in a high intensity zone, and not knowing when that phase ends is really thrilling.
Yeah.
And then the other thought of mine was that, well, the game is freaking gorgeous.
Yes.
Maybe they just wanted to clean up the HUD so that you could look at it more.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the other thing is that there's no radar, which is one of the big things that MGS was, you know, pioneered.
Yeah, the little dot on your screen.
Yeah.
This is a way better tagging system, even though it took place like 40 or 50 years
before
Metal Gear.
What else? The stealth, like in Metal Gear Solid 3 and 4, you had kind of a percentage meter of how hidden you were.
Yep.
Whereas there's nothing, you know.
There's like a slight, when you're spotted, there's like a white glow that shows where they're from. In much of the same way a lot of games do when you're being fired at, which I think is a really, I think it's a clever and intuitive design choice, because we're used to gleaning location and proximity from those types of mechanics, or visual interface design.
Yeah.
So that's a really good idea. And that acts as your percentage meter, because as they come closer, it sort of brightens up.
Mm-hmm.
The music changes in nice little pitches. I mean, this is kind of stuff that Metal Gear's always done really well.
Yeah.
But
the attention to detail, like, the attention to detail, like, Metal Gear games, like, they can be a little bit clunky, like, especially some, like, people's favorite Metal Gear game is often Metal Gear Solid 3, and it's actually one of my least favorite games because of the way that the close quarters combat works. Like, it's just very clunky and, like, baroque to its own detriment. Like, you have to press so many different buttons, and this game still has that problem.
Oh, yeah, like, you gotta push some buttons.
I mean, like, Metal Gear is just ridiculously complex. Like, you press one button to, you know, hold on to a guy, you know, immobilize him, and then if you want to interrogate him, you have to press the other shoulder button
while holding down the
first one, and then mess with the stick to ask him questions. And then if you want to lethally kill him, you have to press a different button. Or if you want to non-lethally kill him, you have to press a separate button again.
And so then it's smash, like, that one, not just once. Yeah,
I mean, well, like, it is baroque. Like, there's so much intricacy to it.
Well, and I think that's very much intentional, right?
Yeah.
At one point, you messed up and accidentally told him, like, call your friends or whatever. And the result, I thought, was really interesting in that it sort of creates this incentive for you to take a risk when you decide you want to knock someone out. Or, like, you accidentally kicked a guy and then he woke up and sounded the alarm.
Yeah.
It makes killing someone easier in a way, and I think that's pretty smart.
Yeah, the easy way is to just murder people.
Yeah,
And it's the you know, the other things are, like, just even, like, aiming or reloading your gun. Like, it's not just a simple kind of, like, Call of Duty, like, you know, zoom in with left, fire with right. Like, there are, like, different ways to peek around corners. Like,
yeah, there's different ways to zoom in.
Yeah,
like the set amount versus slow zoom.
It's just, it's interesting that they modernized in some respects around, like, having a free camera and allowing you, like, in Metal Gear Solid, the original PlayStation version, you couldn't fire in first person. You couldn't even move and shoot at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they've come so far from, like, their original vision, but they are still holding on to these weird intricacies that, I guess at this point, define the series.
Yeah.
You know? But the stealth itself, I thought, was just extremely satisfying because of its complexity. and because of the number of things going on. Like, you could be in cover, you could be in, like, tall grass. The noise that your feet made a big difference. Like,
Footprints, blood.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Even compared to something like Dishonored, which I think is, like, probably one of the best stealth games ever created, like, the robustness, like, the number of variables in the system has... I don't know, it just seems unmatched.
We were talking about it during the game, but there was a sequence where we heard the sound of a camera movement, and we didn't know what it was, and we were like, what is that?
Yes.
We don't know, but it's probably important.
Yeah, we knew it was like a rhythmic sound going back and forth that sounded like a piece of machinery.
Yes.
We didn't... Cameras hadn't even been introduced yet, but we knew that something was going on.
Yeah. And once we figured it out, it just becomes this other variable that you have to account for. Like, okay, well, we know that there's a camera over there, so I'm not going to rush out. Like, I think at one point, you were crawling under a building, and you got out to go get a guy, and he stepped a little bit too far to the point where you were like, that is within the camera view.
Yeah.
And your moment of either commit and do it or not commit was growing increasingly short, and you decided to back up and reposition. And that's awesome. Like, the little ways that you can read the environment without cluttering the screen or cluttering your mind is really compelling. And what I thought was so interesting about stealth in this game, and I think this is somewhat true of Dishonored as well, is that most of the joy that I'm getting from playing it is not the act of doing it, but the act of planning for it. Like, there's so much strategy involved. Of when we got, especially when we had to rescue Haas, the scenario in our minds was just like astronomically difficult. There's so many guys around, a bunch of cameras, a bunch of doors we had to go through. We'd been spotted like numerous times at this point. And it was just this weird, chaotic environment where we had to make certain calls. And then when that inevitably fails, like, even before then, you knocked a guy out, someone spotted the guy, and it just, like, shit hit the fan, you shot a guy with a sleep dart, but it took a really long time, and he ended up passing out, like, right in front of you, and that sequence of events was not planned in the way that, I mean, we planned it, but how it actually came about was not how we planned it at all, and that was so much more exciting, and that's exactly the joy that you see in something like Dishonored, I think.
Yep, and it's... And I think the lack of a HUD also helps that, because at a certain point we figured out that you can have the map up and walk around with the map, but of course the game is still going on as you're doing it. So, you know,
Far Cry 2 style.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's this sense that they, you know, even though it's still a very, like, traditional feeling game, like, you know, people, I'm sure it will strike them as a more, like, you know, kind of Japanese style game from a Japanese publisher, like, it feels like they've at least played other games in the interim. You know, like, that, that's kind of the big criticism of Japanese game development, which is like, what are you guys doing? Like, are you not learning, looking at things? Yeah, like, this feels like someone played a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of big, you know, AAA action games and stealth games. It's like, oh, there are some good ideas here. One of the ones that I thought was, and you know what, a franchise that I'm not sure how much they borrowed from, because I'm not familiar with it, is... the Tom Clancy one, Splinter Cell. I'm sure there's a hefty dose of Splinter Cell in here. I just am not knowledgeable enough about it. The stealth thing that I like the best is that when you get spotted, the game slows down bullet time for a moment.
If you press the button, you gotta press a button. Don't forget, there are buttons.
You have to press a button. So, like, there's that initial skill test of, are you gonna panic or are you gonna press the button to slow down time for, you know, 3 seconds, and then be able to make an informed decision about what you want to do. So it's like, it's chaos, but it's also a skill test and a way to save yourself from a mistake.
Yep.
Like, it's brilliant. I don't know why.
And forces you into strategy. I think it is hands down the best mechanic in the game.
Yeah. And I don't know where, if ever, I've ever seen something like that before. Like,
not in a stealth experience.
Yeah.
Like, that ability...
Yeah.
I mean, there were countless times when it happened in the game and we had to quickly knock someone out. But the moment that stood out for me, I think you were playing at the time. you went around a corner to kill a guy, and he turned around and saw you. And you went into slow mode, and you had the wrong gun that you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like... Don't know what to do. Yeah. You turned around, because it lasts quite a bit. You turned around and started running away before you realized, I can't run away. This isn't going to work. So instead you went back and just unloaded 3 rounds into his neck, which is just enough sleeping darts to knock him out right out of the bat. And that moment of, like, panic, adjustment and then readjustments
yep.
is not possible in a stealth game unless you're given this unique opportunity
yeah.
that is very rare in stealth games. Like that, the concept, the only thing I can compare it to sort of is in Mark of the Ninja yeah. when you're throwing a weapon.
Right, and everything freezes. Yeah.
Right, and that freezing moment is a really good opportunity for you to like take a second, read your environment
mm-hmm.
Under this admittedly extreme constraint and respond to it.
Yep.
And that is an awesome opportunity to yeah. incorporate into a 3D stealth game.
And it also addresses the problem that afflicts Metal Gear like to the extreme, mm-hmm. but stealth games in general, which is it breaks your flow so easily when yeah. you get caught and people feel like, oh, well, I might as well just restart now.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
And I mean, this is like, it's a way to catch your mistake, and it's also a way for something to look cool and be satisfying,
oh, yeah.
even if you screw up.
You pointed out yeah. how the rain will slow down as it falls.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, this game, I think that's the other thing that I just want to talk about this game for, which is like this game is like one of the games so far that it's like, oh, okay, this is why there's a new console generation.
Yeah.
Because we looked at some YouTube videos of like the PS3 and, okay. and Xbox version. Like we were bad, like, yeah. oh God, woof. Is this like a PS1 thing? Like mm-hmm. it's, and I think this is Kojima all over. Like if you look at Metal Gear Solid 4, it's still a great looking game.
Yeah.
And just the level, the meticulous level of detail that is everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I was commenting on the foot. Like,
yeah.
Pos, at one point you're carrying a yeah. like, guard, and you see her, or you're carrying a character, and you see her feet. And her feet are, like, really well designed.
Yeah.
They look really good. The
skin
pinks,
tones and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, the skin tones. Yeah. The, you know, a foot that's been walking has, like, more yeah. pink, and it's just, it was weirdly interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that throughout. Like, the sound effects, yep. you know, just the way that they are placed in the environment, and also just the fidelity of it. Like, there's a sharpness to everything that is like, so they have this thing, they're calling it like the Fox engine, like this mm-hmm. is the engine that they're going to be using for their games going forward. And it's like, oh, okay, well, there is something besides like Unreal.
Yeah,
you know, there is something besides, you know, Unity or the Frostbite engine or something like that.
Right.
Like it's like, oh wow, like they built something that can go toe-to-toe with pretty much any AAA game out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, it's been used for like one or two games so far. Like yep. maybe Revengeance used yeah. a version of it.
And the when you play the main storyline, it's mostly at nighttime.
Yeah.
Or it's all at nighttime, excuse me. But when you play the side missions, you see it in different lighting.
Yeah.
At one point we played in dusk and another yeah. in complete light of day.
Yeah.
And it's the same map, but it looks very different. And it still holds up. It's still gorgeous. It's not like the only reason this looks cool is because it's drenched in water
yeah.
and has a lot of like, you know, light reflections
right.
and stuff. It just looks good in general.
Like, it's just, to make the bulk of your game happen when it's raining is just like, you're just being like the Harlem Globetrotters. It's like you're just showing off.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
look, hey, everyone, check this out. There's zero slowdown.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, it's weird. Like, it's almost ostentatious. And, you know, it goes from cutscene to in-game play with zero. Like, once you load into it, that's it. Like, there's no more loads. Like,
yep.
it's. And I think that's something, before we go into spoilers, that we should talk about a little bit, too. Because this is, like, their test of, like, what a more open-world
yeah.
MGS game looks like. Whereas the other MGS games have been progressively more open, but this is like fully like,
yeah.
you know, there's no sections of it.
There are certain moments in Ground Zeroes where we said aloud, but I, you know, it's really easy to think about the ways in which you can do things and have that change fundamentally that experience.
Yeah.
So at one point we see a truck go
yeah.
and we were like, oh, we should have just gotten inside the truck.
Yep.
I bet you that. And that almost certainly would have worked.
Yeah.
Or the way that you turned a corner and you bumped into a super grate that we
yeah.
ended up going through. This is a relatively small environment.
Yeah.
And the ways that it teases the different possibilities that are available even in
yeah.
this relatively small environment is enough to really whet my appetite for Phantom Pain, because you realize, wow, if they really have a completely vast open world,
yeah.
the amount of weird scenarios you can find yourself in are just exponentially greater.
Yeah. And that's also, like, I think that also softens the blow of, like, okay, you can burn through the main mission in a few hours.
Definitely.
But, I mean, you know, if you're not looking through, like, all of the corridors and, like, all of the, you know, different, like, tunnels and stuff that you can go through, I mean, there's a density here that is much more like something like Dishonored than it is like a huge breadth of an open world like Red Dead or something like
that. Well, there was that moment too where we were like, oh, I wonder if we can put her in the car. And for a minute we thought we couldn't put a character in the car, and we were kind of upset because the world promises a lot.
Yeah.
But then we just figured out we were holding it wrong. And of course, she can go in the car.
Well, and it's also like, but in classic like Metal Gear way, there's a very specific way that you have to position it to put her in the car. And you have to press the button at a certain time. Like it's very... Make no bones about it. Like, this is a finicky game.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You will press the wrong button a lot
and
of times.
Set her down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's... And, you know, at that point, it's just like, well... Because clearly these people have shown that they have the capacity to change their design if they want to.
Yeah.
This is the thing that they want to make.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, as finicky as it is. Like, this is it.
It just... It's kind of blows my mind that... Like 3 hours, it's a, you know, 3 hours we played the game.
Yeah.
That includes dying numerous times.
Right.
There are still a lot of moments that were memorable to me. I mean, given we just finished playing it.
Right.
There were like, when you decided to just get in the car and drive away.
Yeah.
I mean, not only the numerous times you messed up, that was hilarious. But when you realize that, oh, they think you're just one of the guards and you're driving the routine.
And like, also, maybe I shouldn't drive like a maniac.
Yeah.
And then they won't,
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, am I clear? I think I'm clear. All right, I'm going to get out of the truck now. Like that feeling of not being, of being uncertain about how to play it, but being able to read the environment based upon their reactions is sort of how Snake would feel, or Big Boss in this case, would feel going through that same circumstance. And that's so cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, for people that just want to see a different take on stealth, then I think this is a great opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
At this point, though, we should probably transition into talking about the story, such as it is.
Yeah. let's talk about the Metal Gear Solid story.
So, you know, spoilers, I suppose, because the story is, first of off, inscrutable, and second off, it kind of really terrifies me for what the Phantom Pain story is going to be like.
Yeah.
Because it feels like Kojima and whoever else he's helping, or whoever else is helping him write these things... like, they've taken all of the progressive lessons for mechanics and systems and doubled down on the regressive lessons
in narrative
and storytelling.
It is outlandish in basically every way that word can mean.
Yeah.
Like, that is... Yeah. And
both positively and negatively.
Yeah.
But very much in some parts negatively.
I'm shocked by how much Metal Gear lore you still happen to have in your mind. you know, I haven't played a whole lot of Metal Gear, but I just... God, what is going on?
You might as well be showing someone Dota for the first time.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, if someone has never played a Metal Gear game and they play this game, why would you even continue past the like introductory video? It is already incomprehensible malarkey.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the game, we were like, who's Skullface?
Yeah.
We looked it up on the wiki later. Oh, this is his first appearance in the game.
Yeah.
But
his first appearance in the series.
In the whole series. And the way that they treat him, though, is as though you're just, oh, Skullface.
Oh, it's Skullface. Oh,
classic Skullface, you know? But like, of course. And it's just, I don't know who any of these people are or why, what they're doing here. And there's references, even in-game. Like, you'll hear guards go, oh, the XOF guys are over there. Yeah. I don't know
what is XOF.
What does that even mean?
Yeah. And like... It's also, like, this main story is based on a bunch of PSP games.
Yep.
Like, come on. Like, I mean, like...
like, 12 people played this.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people played those games, but nowhere near the amount of people that played the console, you know, games. And also, just, that's also when the Metal Gear story itself got weird.
Yep.
You know, like, and Metal Gear is already a weird game, but, like, they went into the prequel. It's like a, you know, a Cold War story. Everyone has a weird alias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people that may be double agents, may not be double agents, like...
Yeah, there's people who, like, they're showing these emotions of being betrayed, but we don't...
Why are they being betrayed?
We don't know why they were betrayed in the first place, if they were betrayed, and why... I mean, because we don't know them, their reactions are just meaningless emotional outbursts to us.
It's melodrama.
Yeah, it's like, very melodramatic.
It. Yeah.
I mean, the way that the villain... I mean, I don't know. He looks like a villain. At his skull face.
We don't, maybe he's just a misunderstood guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got facial disfigurement.
Yeah.
It's not his fault.
Yeah.
I mean, we never even see him in the game outside of the first...
Yeah. All we do is hear him, like, torture a young girl, which is something that we'll come back to, because that's, like, pretty egregious. But, okay, so the good parts are that they are willing to like fully buy in to this lore that there are things like walking tanks with nuclear missiles happening right alongside the rise of the Soviet Union.
Yep.
And there are nanomachines at the same time that there are, like in Metal Gear Solid 4, like trained monkeys that are also soldiers. You know, like the...
Yeah. Oh, is that a real thing? Or do you
For sure.
Oh,
like there's a monkey that helped you out. Yeah, yeah.
Great. Fantastic.
You know, in much the same way, actually, that I admire the BioShock story.
Yeah.
I admire the Metal Gear story.
For just committing.
You committed to your madness. You know? Like And it almost feels like this is like Kojima's way of like, I'm just gonna keep pushing and see if anyone will stop me. You know? When will they let me make another game?
Yeah. When he puts himself in the game.
Yeah. In one of the side missions, his name is literally Hideo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wears the weird, like, funky plastic, like, shiny glasses Kojima's always wearing. Glasses. Yeah.
I just don't see why anybody would care, right? Like, we enjoyed the game for the most part, like, mechanically speaking, right? And I'm eager to play the Phantom Pain to experience an open world.
Yeah.
But why bother? Like, I'm never going to read any of your stuff. Mm. I mean, again, maybe if I committed, like, 10 hours, 20 hours into detailed backstory on the wiki and stuff, I could be primed for enjoying the game as a sort of narrative experience. Yeah. But it seems like they just don't even care anymore, that people don't know what's going on, and that's totally okay. And that is perfectly represented in the way that after the game is over, it adds on more and more incomprehensible crap.
Yeah.
Like, you save the day, and then you go to, like, there's some sort of sinking barge, now people are fighting, and there's this guy that you've never seen in the entire game who has apparently relationships with you and Paz.
Yeah.
And Paz jumps out of the helicopter, she blows it up, then there's the credits, but then there's like another video of Phantom Pain prep, I guess, 9 years in the future.
Yeah.
And then another like text list of like the events that take place from the 20s onward. Yeah. Interspersed with real historical events and fake historical events without any reference to what those fake historical events are.
That's the admirable part. Like, to them, those are not fake historical events. Like, they're going for it so much that there's no separation between, like, their universe. Like, this is the one universe that they're trying to do.
You know, we talked about the last BioShock Infinite DLC as a way of experiencing the entirety that is BioShock.
Yeah.
Pros and cons, flaws and all, as one unified experience.
Yeah.
You just cannot have that anymore. There is no whole Metal Gear experience you can have, because core, essential story pieces are so widely dispersed.
Yep.
And even if you were to try your best to collect them all together, they clearly don't. Mm-hmm. And so the result is, like, you'd have to play every single one of these games and still struggle with understanding the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have a whole, and that is just constantly, like, something under my nails, right? It's just constantly pestering me, because I don't know who these people are.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing we would be irresponsible if we didn't bring up was, I think there's, like, some, like, pretty disturbing imagery with Paz and just treatment of her character in general. Yeah. Like, just say people have different terms for this, you know.
Damsel in distress,
fridging, like, you know, like...
Fridging?
Yeah, like the woman in the refrigerator, like, it's a comic book trope where, like, in order to hurt the protagonist, you kill the girlfriend.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Like...
The darkness.
It's just like, it's monstrous. Like, it's flat out monstrous. Like, they insert a bomb into her, and then there's this really, like, gory scene where you're, like, doing open gut surgery on her while she's awake.
Yeah, and it goes back on that gore.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
There's, like, multiple, like, at the same time, like, extremely, like, gross, yet also, like, in a really cowardly way, subtle, like, oblique references to her being raped, like, in the prison, and, like, a bomb being put inside of her to the guts.
Yep.
So it's, like... And that's the thing that pisses me off about it, too. Like, it's not even really brave enough to come out and say it.
Yep.
It's, like, all these, like, oh, inferences, and, ooh, something terrible happened. And it's, like... It's just, like, objectifying in the grossest way possible.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And it does not, because there's already been a controversy around Silent Sniper or Quiet Sniper or whatever. Yeah. The one of the characters in the forthcoming Phantom Pain, and
for wearing like nothing, yeah,
like over sexualization and just other sexist tones around the character, and like. It does not inspire confidence.
Yeah.
You know, to see how they treated Paz in this one, like, I don't know, man. Like, someone needs to sit down with the writers and like, okay, is this people or tools?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, would you say that the same thing applies to the treatment of the whole Guantanamo military prisoner thing as well?
I mean, maybe, but not, I mean...
I mean,
a similar way, but less, because like Metal Gear has always been like about using like systems as kind of stand-ins for its messages.
Sure.
Like even in the first Metal Gear Solid, like it was about like nuclear armaments and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So the core enemy is not some individual skull-faced gentleman.
Right.
But instead,
right.
Like you know, the system of. What did they say? They actually say in the game that he brought down, like, what, modern capitalism or something?
Well, yeah. And also, like, Metal Gear Solid, the Solid series has always been about the war economy.
Yeah.
Like, how the United States and the larger industrialized world kind of runs on a constant cycle of conflict and technology that arises from that conflict.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought
Guantanamo stuff is kind of, like, I don't think they treat it very respectfully. Like,
sure, yeah. Like, I thought it was interesting that the people you're with, even if he saves them... says over and over again, oh, that makes sense to save them if they're providing you good intel.
Yeah.
There's no moral or ethical reason for Big Boss to save any of these individuals.
Yeah.
And there's no sense of shaming, really, of anybody who's right. participating in that. And I don't mean to compare the sort of horrific experience that Paz presumably undergoes with that of the same prisoners who were held at this Guantanamo-like facility, but I think that the way that they approach both any sort of serious subject matter is clearly in a way that it just is not done with any sort of tact in any way. And I don't know. I get the sense that it's one or two people with the idea and they just don't talk to anybody about it. I really don't think that they talk to any women about it.
Yeah.
Because I just have a hard time seeing this particular narrative brought up, either this one or the Guantanamo one, to a large group and not having some dissenting voice to convince them to do something slightly different.
Or at least just treat it with some depth.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are realities of sexual abuse and secret prisons in the world.
Yes.
Stories that should be told, but this is using it as kind of a backdrop and as a motivating force for other characters rather than actually treating them as topics unto themselves.
Yeah.
And then you
have some like comical mischief of saving Hideo Kojima from the prison. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's always been a tension in Metal Gear, like always.
I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it too, I don't think.
I mean, you can damn well try, like, which is what they always do, but I think they're always stronger. Those games are stronger when they go more about the philosophy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2 talking about like mimetic transference of ideas and stuff. Like, I mean, that stuff was pretty neat for 2001 or whenever that game came out, you know? And like, go like full anime, like, oh, there's the United States is actually being controlled by AIs. Like, okay, that's like outlandish enough to not be like perhaps specifically repugnant to a group of people, you know?
I mean, other than AI sympathizers.
Other than I mean, but we all know they don't have souls. Come They're on. Fine. Yeah, it's okay. It is. I don't know. It's like the best and the worst thing about Metal Gear, kind of.
Yeah.
Like in that example.
It's such like an uncontrolled experiment.
Yeah.
And that can be really fascinating to play. I think. And you're right. Like, I think you have every reason to be nervous about Phantom Pain.
Yeah.
As much as you have every reason to be excited about Phantom
Pain. Yeah. It's so rare that we see games where it doesn't feel like they have an editor.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it feels like Kojima Productions is like this weird little Skunkworks team inside, or not little anymore. I'm sure they have
a small army.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure within Konami, people probably resent them because clearly they're getting the resources and the time to just and the freedom to just
do whatever they want.
Like, we will have not only will we talk about, you know, the weirdest storyline stuff, but in order to play the game, we'll force players to go through a 4-button sequence to choke someone out. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is like Suda 51 level stuff.
Yeah.
With a Gears of War budget. Like, nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah. I was glad that we finally played it, though, because I heard a lot of conflicting things.
Yeah, I mean, it is a conflicting experience, I guess.
Yeah.
I can imagine, like, I have a hard time imagining not trying Phantom Pain out because of this particular experience, right? Like, that what they offer and what the potential is for that open world experience for Phantom Pain is absolutely compelling. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons they created it in the first place.
Yeah.
As a sort of, like, advanced, pay-for-itself marketing scheme.
Yeah.
And it works. But I think there's also a lot of places where they can misstep, right? And it's not just the outlandish story, which is obvious.
Yeah.
But also, you know, who knows what they'll change for the open world. And when this is a particular sequence where we're in a heavily structured military environment. Mm-hmm. But is this going to work on, like, the open desert plains? Yeah. Like, are we just going to have multiple facilities like this and call that quote-unquote open world?
Right.
I mean, it's a desert. There are horses. I immediately think of Red Dead Redemption, which is one of my favorite games of all time, our favorite games. Yeah.
Did you see that horse stealth, though?
That sweet, Did you see that horse stealth? I mean, like, I think that there's going to be really cool opportunities, but at the same time, you know, how much trust can you put in the series anymore? You know, like, is this...
Well, I mean, someone who played Metal Gear Solid... Like, I think Metal Gear Solid 4 is an amazing game.
Yeah, yeah, like, you like that one.
Yeah, so I think it's just... It's more about, like, where do you think they go from there and whether they're gonna...
Well, I mean, is this it? Is Metal Gear Solid 5 end up being the end? I mean, we're talking about the whole experience, right? Yeah. This goes all the way to the beginning.
Yeah.
No, there's too much money in it.
I really do think Kojima's trapped for, like, forever. Like, I don't...
He's still pretty young, right? How old is he?
I don't know. He's been making games since the 80s.
Yeah,
Metal Gear came out on the Master System.
So here, okay, how about this theory then? That sequence where we save Kojima from the prison is actually
a
metaphor.
Yes.
It's his cry for help. He's like, somebody please come to Konami offices.
That was what Metal Gear Solid 4 was. Like, at the end of Metal Gear Solid 4, like, Snake is deciding whether to kill himself because the only thing that will stop, like, the endless cycle of violence or the endlessness of his, like, cyclical nature of going through this same mission over and over again, which is actually what they did. Like, they recreated scene by scene certain things from the games, is to just destroy himself. And, like, it feels like Kojima is, like, every new game, he's like, all right, well, maybe if I go this far, they'll not ask me to make another.
Maybe if I put myself in this... Yeah, the next game, the bonus level is literally going to be, like, paratrooping into Konami Studios.
Yeah, I mean... And saving him, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's just going to be him, like, VHS and, like, FMV, pleading, like, please let me go.
Please don't buy this game. I mean,
brand new trailer from Konami Productions.
But then again, it would be heralded as a brilliant marketing Art Nouveau, campaign. Yeah, exactly. Oh, look at this punk, you know. Yeah, I just think he's weirdly trapped in this own creation that he makes better and better, even though it's stranger and stranger.
Yeah.
He'll never be able to get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something that I've long... After Metal Gear Solid 4, because Metal Gear Solid 4 basically summed up the entire series, there's nowhere for them to go but backwards. So, you know, we'll have to see, I guess.
Well, I'm just going to go save him. I'm just going to
go into helicopter right now.
Let's go.
We've already done that. We'll just, you know, try not to... You know, be too liberal with that grenade launcher. We saw what happened in that mission.
Side note, not a single cardboard box in this video game.
That we know of.
We've seen. In the core storyline, we did not find a box.
Yeah, we did a couple of the side ones, too.
Have all Metal Gear games had cardboard boxes to hide in?
I don't know.
I mean, they have a cardboard box in Super Smash Brothers.
I refuse to believe it. I'll put this out there right now. I refuse to believe that this game does not have a cardboard box. I just think we didn't find it.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right.
If anyone knows this, because I don't want to ruin it for myself. I could easily look this up on Wikipedia or whatever, but, like, let us know if we just missed this. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And we live in a cardboard box, in a way. An internet cardboard box that is experiencepoints.net. It's
controlled by AI and nanomachines.
It is. We are. Scott and I are actually, we are Metal Gears. Is that a thing? I don't still
We're
don't
part
know.
Of the L'Enfanterie program.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Come on down, experiencepoints.net.
Let me tell you about the boss.
Oh, no.
It became the big boss, and then Naked Snake.
And then the small boss.
And then the small boss. And then Andy Samberg.
That's I need like 8 nicknames, I think, yeah. is what I need.
You need to spend the next year before Phantom Pain goes out really hitting the books hard for Metal Gear.
Oh, man. I wonder how much research Kiefer Sutherland did for this role.
Oh, side note.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Kiefer Sutherland conspiracy.
Yeah, so by the way, I sorely missed David Hayter in this game, as it does, that gruff, gravelly, solid Snake was just not the same.
Well, that's probably why they didn't give him any dialogue.
Yeah, they probably also didn't want to pay him for...
Yes, that's also true.
They probably didn't want to pay that Kiefer money.
It's like words per minute for him.
But like he had like 50 lines in the whole game. Like it was, and most of them were like, look out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love you, Kiefer. I'm sure you're just saving it up for the Phantom Pain.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 24, man. He's got to save his voice.
That does get gravelly. All right. Until next time, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.
Walker. Every time.